ग्लानिर्भवति भारत अद्युतानम् अधर्मश तदात्मानम् सृजाम्यहम् परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय च दुष्कृता धर्म संस्थापनार्थाय शम्भभामि युगे युगे शम्भभामि युगे युगे हरेर्नाम हरेर्नाम हरेर्नामैव केवलम् कलौ नास्त्येव 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 गतिरन्यथा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे
Hare Krishna. Welcome to the weekly Krishna Consciousness Program. And once again, I would like to invite all the listeners to the Hare Krishna Chamber, which is at 1229 Coatesville Riverhead Highway, also known as Highway 28, where every Sundays we hold special public programs, starting at 11:30 with bhajans and kirtans, followed by Aarti of their lordships at 12:30, and then we have our discourse on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from 1 to 2, followed by Guru Puja, a worship of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And then we finish the day's program at 2:30 with a vegetarian feast. Please come along, join us, and celebrate Krishna consciousness and find out for yourself what is Krishna consciousness all about.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram.
I'll continue with the Ramayana story. So far we have heard that on the eve of coronation of Lord Ram as king of Ayodhya, Kaikeyi asked King Dashrath for her two boons. One, that Bharat, her son, Kaikeyi's son, Bharat becomes the king of Ayodhya and Ram is exiled for 14 years. In the morning, the chief minister, Sumant, goes to fetch the king, and he's bewildered at the scene that he finds there. And while Sumant was trying to work out what has happened, Kekki walked up to the rattle minister and told him, "The king is brimming with joy about Rama's coronation, and all this excitement had kept him awake throughout the night. That lack of sleep is taking its toll on his aging body. There's only one solution to the king's fatigue: Ram's presence." Sumant understood what was expected of him and left the palace to do his bidding. Outside, many of Ayodhya's prominent citizens and experienced Brahmins who had performed all-night vigil chanting holy mantras to invoke auspiciousness were waiting for the king to step out. When instead they saw the lone minister, they were perturbed. They hurled a barrage of questions and doubts at the minister. "Why don't you have the king with you? What's wrong? Didn't you tell him that the star had already set off on his arc and this auspicious time for the coronation is fast ticking away? With so many heads talking and pushing him back," Sumant realized that precious time was being lost and that he had to retrace his steps to the king. Kekki had no doubt implied that he should fetch Ram, but Sumant decided on a reconsultation with the king on these priorities at the moment. No sooner than Sumant opened his mouth to convey the Brahmin's anxiety to the king, Dashrath, on seeing his minister walking without Ram, cut him short and snapped, "What's wrong with you? Why didn't you not follow her advice? Get Ram here at this instant." The king's irritation unsettled Sumant for a moment. He left like a ball tossed around in different directions. If he had to be a ball anyway, he'd rather be hurled towards Ram's magical palace, where hope and confidence resided in abundance, and assured he would be better off fetching Ram and being near him. Sumant walked towards the gates of Ram's palace. As Sumant inched closer to the palace, he could see large gem-studded doors and coral-embroidered festoons. No matter how many times he walked through these corridors, the art along the walls always fascinated and enthralled him. There were intricately carved exotic ivory, metal, and wood sculptures placed at regular intervals, enhancing the beauty of the grand furnishing. Sumantra shook the days off his indulgent mind. He was there for a very important job and hurriedly walked past the seven enclosures that led to Lord Ram's private chamber. The surrounding beauty magnified with each step he took towards the chamber. But he refused to allow himself to be swayed away from his purpose of visit. When he finally reached the door, he sent a guard clad in orange uniform to inform Lord Ram that his servant was at his doorstep with palms folded in Anjali Mudra. The guard returned and ushered him into Ram's chamber. Sumantra carved this moment into his memory for recollection at a later date. Ram was all dressed for the coronation, yellowish robes, a diamond pendant on his broad chest, earrings dangling from his ears, and amulets stretching across his powerful biceps. Sandalwood perfume on the body. He was seated on a golden swing, draped with bright red silk, laced with gold. He swung gently as Sita stood beside him, endearing, waving a peacock feather fan. The pair was immersed in a loving conversation and closely resembled the shining moon accompanied by the Chitra star. Sumantra had come with a purpose, so he couldn't afford to immerse himself in Ram's beauty. He moved closer to them. As soon as he stepped into their midst, Sita and Ram stood up and greeted the elderly minister. Sumant blessed Ram with the Abhay Mudra and uttered Ayushman. My dear prince, King Dashrath and Queen Kaikeyi want to see you this instant. I have come to fetch you. Ram instantly turned to Sita and said, surely, father and mother Kaikeyi have decided something wonderful for our well-being, benefits and prosperity. Sita smiled, acknowledging his sentiment and understanding his mind. Her smile filled Ram with confidence. Ram followed Sumantra, and Sita followed him till the doorway of the inner chamber. Just before leaving to meet his father, Ram stopped, exchanged glances with Sita, removed a fragrant garland from around his neck, and gently placed it around hers and smiled. Sita looked at the garland for a few moments and broke into a smile. She then wove an imaginary garland around Ram's neck by moving her beautiful eyes and smiled again. Sumantra assumed this as some act of intimate love between the couple. Or was it? Could this be some kind of deep, inaudible communication between the two? Briefly, let's talk about what is true communication. This brief episode between Ram and Sita teaches the essence of good communication. They speak so little but understand so much. The answers to the four questions in this episode teaches how to maintain good relationship. Communication is therefore not so much verbal as it is integral or heartfelt. Why did Ram say that mother and father are surely planning something good for them? Seeing the positives in every situation is the nature of a pure mind. Preparing the mind not to see faults, but rather the hidden good in everything is the first step to good relationship. A successful gold digger focuses on the gold in the dirt, and an unsuccessful one is bothered by the amount of dirt around. Ram was trying to convey to Sita that no matter what instructions Dashrath and Kaikeyi had for him, it was for their welfare, even though it may not seem that way. Good relationships begin by helping each other. See good intentions in every act and keep away from criticism. Number 2, why did Ram place the garland around Sita's neck? Ram implied that the only gift he would henceforth be able to give her would be forest flowers because he was going to lose all his wealth. He merely wanted to ascertain if she was willing to accept him despite the change in circumstances. Sita did not speak, only smiled, indicating that she was happy to follow the mood and mission of Ram. Sita knew that the time had come for them to leave Ayodhya to carry out the mission of his incarnation. She had come to assist him in his mission. For Sita, being with Ram at all times was more important than being with him only during happy times. good relationships grow in both the happy and sad faces of life are shared and complaints are kept by bay. Number three, why did Sita weave a garland about Ram's neck with her eyes? She wove a garland as token of recognition of her love for her. When one is accustomed to tangible gifts, one tends to forget the value of intangible gifts. From the tangible perspective, the silent exchanges between Sita and Ram were valueless. But from the intangible perspective, these were invaluable. Good relationships survive when those involved realize that the greatest gift for two people actually have in each other is each other. Anything else added to this may enhance but should not replace it. Thus, one should refrain from competing with each other. Number four. What does Sita's invisible garland represent? Sita is also called Sudikshana, which means one who has both skill and strength. She offered both these types of flowers to Ram, interwoven as an individual garland to him. She was conveying that through her skills, she would deftly handle complicated issues that would raise their head from time to time, and through her strong will, she would face these difficulties with determination. Good relationships thrive when people trust each other and use their strength to serve each other selflessly, thus keeping away from cynicism. For healthy relationship and good communication, it is recommended that one embrace four principles and refrain from four bad attitudes. Embrace the habit of seeing the good in others and refrain from criticism. Two, embrace the habit of finding joy in all phases of life and refrain from complaining. Three, embrace the habit of valuing one another and refrain from competing. And four, embrace the habit of serving each other with selfless trust and refrain from cynicism. Sita then invoked the protection of all the gods on Ram. Ram stepped out of the threshold of his inner chamber like a lion coming out of his cave. Just outside the room stood a bowing Lakshman with folded hands, ever eager to save his elder brother. Ever since he was a baby, Lakshman had always felt duty-bound to protect and save the body of Lord Ram. The feeling was instinctive. No one really taught him to do so, nor had he ever tried to fathom why he felt that way. But the feeling was so strong that he allowed it to dictate and direct the entire life. As the two brothers trailed Sumant out of the palace, a sea of enthusiastic people rushed to greet them. Jostling onlookers were huddled together with not even an atom of space between them. Some voices kept urging for space for more people to come in, but people could not move. There was no space. To make things worse, hundreds more continued to throng the courtyard to catch a glimpse of their darling prince, who was to become the king. Ram surveyed his subjects as a cow would its calf before feeding it. Even though there was just one Ram before the multitude of people, each one felt that he had exchanged glances solely with them and reciprocated their feelings. Sumant knew time was running out, so he created a pathway to allow Ram and Lakshman to mount a silver chariot. As Ram continued reciprocating the love of his subject, Lakshman held an umbrella over his head with one hand and waved a chamar with another. The crowd parted to allow the chariot to pass. As Ram's chariot came out of the princes of the palace. It resembled the sun rising over the horizon. Soon everyone began following the chariot, mounting on their horses, elephants or chariots, not wanting to miss a moment with him. With the flowers showering rain heaped of praise, blessing and prayers, some prayed loudly, offering the merit of their entire tapasya to Ram. Some prayed for years of their lives to be added to his, so he could live forever. Everyone seemed to have gained the world merely by looking at him. Once at KK's palace, Ram hopped off his chariot and walked towards the door. Upon entering the palace, he greeted thousands of eager citizens in accordance with their age, position, and relationship with him. As he slowly disappeared into the palace, the people stood outside with bated breath, eager for the coronation to begin. Just as the ocean waited for the rising moon, the tide of Ram's lovers waited for Ramchandra to shine on them. Ram had long disappeared from their vision, but their eyes remained transfixed to the direction of his departure. Their life's hopes had stepped into the palace. After offering prostrate obeisance to his father and mother, KK, Ram stood to one side of the room in Vinay Mudra. His body bent a little as a mark of respect, one hand covering his mouth and the other clasping his ornaments to prevent them from creating disturbances. Ram looked around. The stark difference between the ambience inside and outside did not go unnoticed. Ram was very disturbed by what he saw. He felt a pang. In each of Ram's memories of Dasharatha, the king was on a throne or some ornate seat, dressed in the most regal manner, almost to perfection, grave and power exuding. But here was his father lying on the bare floor, disheveled and dressed in the previous day's wrinkled robes, extremely weak and lifeless. Some steps away stood Kekani, KK, nonchalant and ignorant of the king's condition. Ram could sense a combination of anger, sternness, and cruelty. She did not seem composed, but she looked firm. Ram's eyes then turned to his beloved father, who was sobbing inconsolably. With his eyes shut tight, his pallor made him seem like a rainbow shorn of its color, or a sage who has lost his luster by deviating from dharma. Glistening tears ran down his cheeks, burying his aching heart. Only one word escaped through the painful parted lips, Ram. For a second, Dasharatha opened his eyes to see him. The moment they locked their eyes, Dasharatha turned away, unable to hold his gaze. In that instant, Ram saw an ocean of suffering, almost as if Dasharatha was drowning in that sea of sorrow. Seeing his father suffer, Ram's heart became agitated like the ocean on a full moon night. Usually, the sight of Ram turned Dasharatha's anger to bliss, but today, the one who always brought him pleasure seemed to have become the cause of his misery. Ram realized that his presence had caused his father much distress. He began wondering if he had done something inadvertently to have disturbed his father so much. Ram turned to KK for answers to the questions in his mind. Is my father suffering from some sudden bodily affection, or is something disturbing him mentally? Has some inauspiciousness affected Bharat or Shatrughan or my mother? Or did your pride and anger make you say something harsh to him? It is not always possible to obtain happiness, however. It is my duty to try and read my father of his misery. Keke could sense Rama's apprehensions regarding his father's emotional well-being. She swooped down on the moment she spoke, choosing her words carefully, ensuring that they made the biggest impact. A son is born only to solve a father's dilemma. It is time you prove your worth, Rama. Many moons ago, your father had offered me 2 boons. Now that I have chosen to claim those boons, he is reluctant to grant them because he is worried about your reaction. Only if you promise to do whatever you are told without considering personal loss or gain, will I reveal what is expected of him. The scriptures expect a king to uphold dharma, or righteousness, and to be a role model. Now, Ram, it is up to you to ensure that the king keeps his promise. KK's words shattered Ram, not because he was expecting bad news, but because she had doubted his obedience and loyalty to his father. He said, "At my father's command, entering fire is like walking into a cool pond, consuming poison like licking honey, and drowning in the sea like liberation. Mother, I promise you that I will abide by my father's desire, even if it comes at the cost of self-destruction. The world knows me as Ek Vachan, Ek Patni, and Ek Ban. I believe in one word, one wife, and one arrow. Once given, I don't go back on my words. Once married, my wife is my wife, and once an arrow leaves my bow, it has to reach its mark. My name is equated with truth, so please don't doubt me. Just tell me, what am I expected to do?" So we stop there and continue next week. Please remember to come to the temple. Which is at 1229 Courseville Riverside Highway. And the program starts at 11:30. We'll have a bit of kirtan.